Well, I'm not an expert. I'm not an authority. I'm someone who has been a murderer for almost 20 years.
Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better.
People say Ted Bundy didn't show any emotion. There must be something in that. I showed emotion. You know what people said? See, you really can get violent and angry.
Welcome to The Squonk and the Hag, a podcast about murder, mystery, the supernatural, and even a conspiracy or two.
Dun, dun, dun.
My name is Mo.
And I'm Kraken.
Welcome on in, guys, to another episode of our show. I lost that
Where we torture each other.
Yes. Yes. It's called The Squonk and the Hag. We are professionals.
What's the name of our show again?
I don't know. We are cruising along through our holiday schedule here. So we missed you all last week, but we are back this week. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks. And
for a murdery story, mayhaps.
Yes. We're going to do a very festive murdery story.
Great. Festive crime.
We may have a special Christmas present for y'all that we're planning.
I have a feeling if, like, our listeners know us, they're going to be a little afraid if we just tell them we have a surprise. But, you know, that's kind of the point. We make each other afraid. Now we make our viewers afraid.
Surprise! Krakow's going to be on your doorstep.
I was just about to say Krakow's going to show up at a random viewer's door.
It's just Ranger's house, because you know where he lives.
Exactly. But see, that's not going to be terrifying for Ranger, though, because Ranger's not afraid.
Oh, you have my address. Dang it!
Yeah, because it's either you, Tom, or Zunder. That's about it.
I will say Tommy's probably the closest, so you have fun with that.
Actually, it's tied between Ranger and Tom. I'm literally in the middle of those two.
So if we never hear from you again, it's because you showed up at Tommy's house and disappeared.
Yeah, if I showed up at Tom's house and tried to, you know, steal food, then that's not going to go well.
Oh my god, imagine if you touched his potatoes.
Even worse, they would never find the body.
Mm-hmm. There is one thing in this world you do not mess with, and that is Tommy's potatoes.
True. Even I know this.
Alrighty, so, this week is a Krakow tale.
And I know I've already told you, but in case anyone else is wondering why I sound weird, I've been coughing all week, and it's just now starting to go away, so that's fun.
I was gonna just pretend like nothing was wrong, because...
That's fair.
Who actually listened?
See, that's why, like, I can just tell all of my plans, because no one's listening and they won't remember anyway.
Dude, you won't remember.
Exactly. I'm hoping someone will hear it and remember. But anyway...
Anyway.
And today, to take you away from your craziness, we're going to go on a trip to a very nice, not suspicious at all, national park in Canada.
Why don't I believe you?
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. So this is one of the, it's in the Decho region of the Northwest Territories in Canada. Specifically, it's the Nahanni National Park Reserve.
Okay, national parks are usually nice. They have cute animals, mm-hmm. beautiful scenery.
And actually, this national park, there's no way into it unless you hike into it, you take a plane, or you take a boat. There's no other way into the park.
It sounds like a death trap.
Yeah, basically, because, but a lot of people will say that it's supposedly better than Niagara Falls because the waterfall that's the focal point of this whole park is like a lot bigger than Niagara Falls.
So I got a fun story for you about Niagara Falls.
Oh, I'm sure. Is it murdery?
No. This is actually a tale from my childhood.
Ah, okay.
My parents took us to Niagara Falls. We drove up with a pop-up camper when I was like 2 or 3. So we went on the boat that goes under the falls. What is it, like the Maiden of the Mist or something? Like there's a boat that you can go and
something like that. Yeah,
yeah, you can go on it. And my dad's like, "Oh, look, isn't this neat?" And little 2-year-old Mo passed out and fainted in his arms.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I was that scared. additionally, it rained. So this is a story that'll kind of tell you a little bit about my brother. So it rained, and I don't know if you've ever been in a pop-up camper, but...
I have. It's been years ago.
You shouldn't touch the pop-up part because it'll let water in. And my brother was bored, and it started raining, and you could see all the places he touched.
Bro. So it sounds like me.
So it was my parents. I was like 2 or 3, so my brother was like 8 or 9, and my sister was like 12 or 13. So they had the three of us in a pop-up camper in the rain in Niagara Falls and had to try to keep us occupied without us killing each other. So
yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
But I can also see the whole passing out at the Niagara Falls thing, because I mean, like a 2-year-old looking up at this massive waterfall coming down at them, like, yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've seen, this waterfall, like, is Niagara Falls' big brother.
Oh, wow.
But besides the waterfall, there is the South Nahanni River, and the river runs through the entire park. Like, you can start at one end of the park and follow the river through the entire park.
Oh, wow.
And then there's also a bunch of smaller rivers that branch off from it, but it's rough because it's a lot of white water. So,
okay.
It's a lot of rapids.
Now, is it the type that, like, people take, like, rafts, you know, do the whitewater rafting, or is it more dangerous?
Oh, no, it would be about, like, whitewater rafting. It's nothing too crazy, but, like, if you're not prepared for whitewater rafting, it's probably going to be pretty bad.
Yeah, if it's just, like, some schmuck with an old canoe.
Yeah, if, like, you didn't know, if you've never been whitewater rafting before and you're just in a canoe or a kayak and you try to go through there, you're probably going to panic. Because under the water, it kind of steps down. It has, like, little steps and that the water flows over, so... It gets a little rough, but people used to go through here all the time, and we'll see why I said used to.
Great.
There's also 4 massive canyons that reach 3,300 foot in depth. So like from the base to the top, they're like 3,300 foot up.
Oh, wow.
That's how deep these canyons are, or about 1,000 meters, and they line the river. So there's some parts when you go through it, the river, one of the rivers that we'll be talking about, there's a canyon on either side, and it is a sheer rock wall all the way up. So once you're in the middle of this 10-mile canyon, you have to either go to one end or turn around and go back to the other end, because there's no going to the side. There's very little shoreline, because it's just sheer rock wall that just goes right down into the water, which in this canyon, the water is thousands of feet deep. So you have thousands of feet deep water, and then you have canyons on either side that go a little, roughly 300 feet up. And to make it even better, you feel like you're being watched in this whole canyon, because there's no cover, and there are small caves that dot the walls of this canyon that look out into the river that no one has been to, because no one could really get up there.
Are they like natural caves?
Yeah, they're just cave openings that go to the miles of cave systems that's under this national park.
So it's not like somebody went in there and, like, dug out a cave and then is, like, somehow creepily hiding up there.
I mean, someone could still be creepily hiding up there, because who knows where these caves go and where they come out at, but they're just natural cave openings. It's like, you just imagine you're on this 10-mile stretch of river, massive rock walls on either side of you. You can't go out. You can go back or forward, and that's it. And you just got all these holes along the canyon, and you can't do anything about it. If someone's watching you, they're just watching you.
I mean, honestly, they're going to be entertained, because I am not good at swimming or boating or any kind of nautical activities.
Fair enough.
So they would be laughing their asses off.
That's fair. But so a little bit of tiny bit of history about the park. With all of the canyons and roaring waterfalls and rivers, Nahanni National Park was one of the first 4 natural heritage locations that were listed as a World Heritage Site by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO for short, in 1978.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
The valley, Nahanni Valley, gets its name from the indigenous Dene language, which translates to River of the Land of the Naha People. And I'm probably butchering these names because I can barely speak English. I definitely can't pronounce native names properly.
We know, but we still love you.
Fair. For the past several thousand years, the land that surrounded the valley was where the Dene tribes lived. And through stories and legends that they've passed down, They told of another tribe that lived in the valley, the Naha tribe. There's no evidence of this tribe ever existing except in the stories that the Dene tribe tell. Like, that, all of those people that were a part of those tribes will tell you the same stories about this other tribe that no one can find evidence of. So, supposedly, the Naha tribe were a war tribe that lived in the mountains and would come down the hills and raid, they would do raids, and then they would also hunt people.
Hunt people?
So they were not the best of tribes. Not the friendliest.
Huh.
And so naturally, the Dene tribes were terrified of them.
So basically what you're saying is that this national park is haunted.
Haunted, cursed, yeah, something like that.
Great. Yeah. I don't care how pretty it is, I'm gonna stay in Pennsylvania.
But wait, it gets even better.
No, I think that's the end of the episode. I think you're like, you know what, this is good.
But wait, you want to know that the Dene claim that the Naha tribe just vanished all at once because one day the raids just stopped and no one ever saw anyone of that belonging to that tribe ever again. They just disappeared.
Maybe they're in the bottom of that really deep river.
That, or some people believe that the tribe it still exists today and they're just hiding somewhere in the valley and they've just never been spotted because they've lived in that valley for...
I don't know why. In my brain, I just imagine they're doing that thing from, like, cheesy movies where they're, like, in a bush.
Oh, my God.
And, like, it's, like, a bush with feet, and they, like, get up and skitter, and then they sit down, and then they get up and skitter.
Bruh. That would be kind of funny. Like, wait, wasn't that bush, like, 5 feet to the left last time? Honestly, that's kind of even more horrifying. So, you remember I said that it's possibly haunted or cursed?
You just said it, yes.
Yeah, that could be because of the mysterious deaths and disappearances that have happened in this valley over the years from people going into the valley looking for gold. Because allegedly, these rivers are, like, full of gold. Like, you go out there with a gold sluice and you're going to find a lot of gold. But you might not want to after I read the story.
Okay.
So the specific Nahanni Valley that's in the park, there's a spot there known as 200 Mile Gorge, but later they renamed it to the Valley of the Headless Men.
Wait. We went from haunted or cursed to the Valley of the Headless Men.
Yes.
That's the, like, do you ever watch something and there's like a very jarring transition in it? Versus, like, a nice, smooth, you know...
This is it.
Yeah, Krakow, I think you need to work on those transitions. Because what?
See, that's the reactions I'm looking for, so I see no work that needs to be done here. Carrying on. Because now I've got you wondering why it's named the Valley of the Headless Men, and you're about to find out.
It probably has to do with headless men.
Possibly. So sometime in the early 1900s, I found several dates. So some said 1904, some said 1906, so we're just going to go with early 1900s. There were three brothers, Frank, Willie, and Charlie McLeod. They went all the way from Edmonton, Alberta, to the Nahanni Valley, and they only brought basic gear with them, and they traveled by train, boat, and by foot through the cold Canadian wilderness until they came upon Gold Creek. Here we go with another jarring transition. Gold Creek would later be known as Headless Creek.
I guess Headless Creek is a little less creepy than Creek Full of Heads.
Well, I mean, the Valley of the Headless Men runs through a range of mountains known as the Funeral Mountain Ranges.
This is just getting better and better.
Yeah. So they got out there, they got their stuff set up, and they started panning for gold, and they found quite a bit of it. So... to get back, they were going to take the river, follow the river out. So they made them a makeshift boat. They chopped down some trees and crafted a canoe. But on the way back, their makeshift boat had capsized because it kind of broke apart on the rapids. They weren't ready for how rough the rapids were, and their boat broke apart and threw them into the water. So they lost all but a tiny bit of their gold and a majority of their supplies.
That's not good.
So the only thing that they pretty much had was a little bit of gold, probably a little bit of their supplies, and then their hunting rifle. So they decided to that they were going to try again. They salvaged some of the lumber from their wreckage, chopped down a few more trees, and made a new boat to go back up the river to try again. But this time they didn't really find anything.
I don't know why, but in my mind, I'm just like, they're playing Minecraft.
More or less, yeah.
They lost all their stuff, so now they're going to make a new boat.
I didn't think about that, but that's accurate. So this time when they went back up and they didn't find anything, they decided that they were going to go home, regroup, and plan a second trip to come back into the valley at another time. But this time, their brother Charlie decided that he wasn't going to go back because they had a pretty close call with falling into the river and everything. He didn't want to risk it, so he said he wasn't going back.
You got to risk it for the biscuit, man.
So instead, Frank and Willie brought their friend, who was a Scottish engineer named Robert Weir. So instead, these three men, leaving Charlie behind, those three went into the valley, and no one ever heard from them again after they went into the valley.
That's really sad, because like Charlie's like, nah, I'll stay home, and then he has to deal with losing both of his brothers.
Yeah, because their plan was that because it was 2 years before Charlie led a search party into the valley, because he thought, well, maybe they had found all that. He knew how much gold they had found the first time, so he thought maybe they just found a bunch, they were going to build a cabin and maybe spend some time out there and continue getting more gold and then come back a little bit later. So he kind of brushed it off and was like, they're probably okay. But then after 2 years, he was like, I probably should go check on them.
I have a feeling it's not going to end well in the Valley of the Headless Men.
No.
Along the Headless River.
Well, it wasn't called that until this.
By the Funeral Mountains.
Yeah. Sounds like a lovely place.
Hey, Krakow, I think you should move there.
I would be too tempted to take the shiny gold out of the river and then this would happen to me, so, like, no thank you. So after 2 years after they had gone into the valley, Charlie took a search party in to look for his brothers and their friend. But, so they followed along the river and just trying to see any signs of a camp along the bank. So they were just following the river, and then they went across to where they were at last time. Charlie remembered the general area of where they were. And they found a campsite along the river's edge. And two bodies.
Wait, two?
Two bodies, yes.
The third guy did it!
That's a theory, yeah.
Oh, I was just joking.
No, that's an actual theory.
I thought you were going to be like, no, they walked like 5 feet away and found him.
So these two bodies, the heads had been severed. One body was on the ground outside the tent with an arm that was outstretched like he was reaching for his rifle when he died. The other was inside the tent and he had the blanket partially thrown over him. It was like he had leaped out of bed suddenly, like something had startled him awake and he was in the process of getting out of bed when he died.
Oh, wow.
So they searched the area around the campsite to see if they could find anything else, including where did the heads go, but they never found anything else or the heads.
Oh, that's dark. So
without the heads, it was kind of hard to identify them, but when they looked through the stuff in the camp, they did find some personal items that confirmed that the two bodies were Charlie's two brothers.
Oh, that's really sad.
The other thing that they found at the campsite was a carving in a nearby tree that said, "We have found a fine prospect."
They carved that into a tree?
Yeah.
Didn't they have paper?
I guess they decided to carve it into a tree, or whoever. Someone carved it into a tree. Like, we're not sure who carved it into a tree.
That's weird, but okay.
But the third man, Robert Weir, was nowhere to be found. But several months later, a partial skeleton was discovered down the river from the campsite, but it's unconfirmed whether or not that was Robert. They weren't able to confirm who that was.
Yeah, with a partial skeleton, it's hard to tell not only who it was, but how they got there, how they died, you know, like, except unless you get a head with like a bullet in it. But
like I said, after this incident, the canyon where the campsite and bodies were found became known as Headless Valley, and that river that ran along the campsite became Headless Creek.
Gotcha.
And police didn't really look much into this because there wasn't really a clear sign of how they died. They didn't suspect foul play. They were, for the missing heads, they were just like, well, they've been out here in the wilderness. There are bears and wolves and stuff. They could have carried some of the parts away or something. They chalked it up to natural causes and animals.
Well, yeah, and I mean, they were found 2 years after it happened. So, like, if they were found, you know, days later,
yeah,
it would have been a way different story. Because then you could tell, oh, did an animal take this, or was it sliced off with a machete?
And it's such a remote place, too, that this isn't somewhere that, like, park rangers are constantly checking up on people either. Like, you go in here, you're kind of on your own for the most part.
Yeah.
So, thinking nothing of the stories and superstition with Headless Valley, a Swiss prospector named Martin Jorgensen decided to make a trip by himself into the valley sometime around 1913. So just a few years after this happened.
Did he just not hear the stories? Like, did...
No, he heard, but he didn't think anything of it. He was like, nah, it's probably nothing. It'd be fine. His plan was to build a cabin several miles upriver from where Headless Valley was and live there through the winter and meet up with some friends in the summer. Allegedly, Jorgensen found a lot of gold and sent a letter to his friends stating that they were rich. So this got his friends excited. They were ready to go up there and mine for gold for it with him. And then when summer came around, they went to the meeting spot just outside the valley and waited for him to show up, but he never did.
How did he mail a letter from the middle of nowhere?
That is a good question. I couldn't figure that out. I'm guessing he maybe came out of the valley to mail it and then went back in. Everything I could find just went straight to he sent a letter out. So I'm unsure how he did that.
I just imagine some poor, like, postal worker trucking up this horrible river.
Man, that's
like, you got any mail today?
That's a new one for the Postal Service. Rain, snow, shine, or cursed valley.
Well, I mean, this would be the Canadian Postal Service. I don't know if they have a different motto.
Okay, fair. Forgot about that. Either way, he got word out to them that he found a bunch of gold. So again, they were waiting for him, and he never showed up. So they just kind of camped out at that spot for a few days, thinking that maybe he's running behind, maybe he got busy with something, he's on his way. So after a couple days, they decided to go into the valley towards where he said his cabin was to check up on him. But instead, they found his cabin had been burnt down, and they also found the charred and headless corpse of Martin Jorgensen. And they also found no gold anywhere near the camp or the cabin.
That almost makes me wonder if this is like robbers who live in the area and they're like, let's just steal what everybody else got and then decapitate them because they're, you know, weirdos or something.
Yeah, it sounds like something like that, but there's also some other things.
Oh, great.
So again, they found no gold and they did not find the head. Even though this is very similar to the first incident and it's very close to the site of the other incident, police said that the two weren't connected, and they again insisted that they had died by some other means and the heads missing were the cause of animals. Don't know how they explained the cabin being burnt down, but...
So, it's just their heads missing?
Yeah.
If it was animals, wouldn't lots of stuff be missing?
One would think, yes. It gets even creepier.
I don't know how I feel about these police. Like, I feel like they're, like, covering something up. Maybe the cops are behind it, and the police in 1913 in the Nahanni Valley were corrupt, and they were killing people and decapitating them and taking their gold, and then they're like, nope, it was animals.
I mean, that's a thought, yeah. For the first story, one of the other theories that I saw was that supposedly they think that Robert Weir took the gold that the two men had found, murdered them, and he apparently went to a different city somewhere in the opposite direction of where he came from, and like he had a bunch of money with him.
And he just reinvented himself?
Pretty much, just created a new life and just kind of disappeared with all the money. But for this one, I'm not sure. Unless it's been Robert the whole time.
Yeah, because, like, he was...
Yeah.
He was by himself.
Yeah.
Unless it was Robert Weir. Because it wasn't that long after. It was, like, 7 years later. So, Maybe he didn't move to another city. Maybe he stayed in the Nahanni Valley and he has like a secret lair and he killed Jorgensen.
It's a possibility, yes. Oh, it gets a lot creepier.
Great.
It gets worse. Somehow it gets worse. We keep just going downhill.
How does it get worse?
Well, around several years later, in around 1921, a prospector and trapper named John O'Brien and his partner again ignored the strange things happening in the valley and decided to go looking for gold. Again, they set up camp in Headless Valley, not far from where the McLeod brothers were found. And they spent a few days there and were finding gold. And John told his partner to wait at the camp because he was going to go out and check their traps. And he would be back in about 9 days. So he was going to kind of go off on his own for a little bit, check their traps, and then he would be back. But it would take him about 9 days. So after the 9 days were up and he wasn't back, John's partner decided to go looking for him. While he was looking, he came across another prospector who was also looking for gold in the area. And he kind of told him what was going on, and so the two began looking together along the river to see where John had gone. Eventually, they did find him, but he had frozen to death in front of an extinguished campfire.
What?
And to make it even creepier, allegedly, it looked as if he had been flash frozen.
Is that possible, naturally?
He was an experienced outdoorsman, and they said that the way he was sitting and his expression was not that of someone who was freezing to death. It looked like he was just sitting there enjoying the fire, and he even had a matchbook in his hand.
How? Like, is that something that logistically, naturally can happen? Because I thought flash freezing had to be, like, ridiculously low temperature.
Yeah, it's the way they described it, it's almost as if the temperature had dropped, like, a lot, like, well below freezing instantly. It wasn't like a gradual temperature drop, it was just freezing temperatures immediately, and he froze on the spot, is what it looked like, they said.
That's crazy.
But no foul play was suspected, because the police said even though the positioning was odd, that it was clear he froze to death.
I mean, technically, they're not wrong.
Yeah, they're not wrong, but they have to admit it's a little weird, the positioning he was in, because it was like he was sitting up in front of the fire, kind of hunched over like he was just warming up and getting ready to, you know.
Yeah.
I guess he was getting ready to light it. He had the matchbook. I guess he had built a fire and was about to light it when he froze.
That's just so weird. Like, don't they have an ounce of curiosity in them?
I mean, I would. I don't know how they're not curious about this. I would be wanting to investigate this. I would be like, wait, how did he freeze like
yeah,
this?
But last episode, we determined you should not be an investigator.
This is true, yes. So the next one that freaks me out the most.
Great.
In 1926, a hunting party departed for Nahanni Valley, and among the group was a young girl named May Lafferty, or she went by the name Annie. She was the younger cousin of Poole Field's wife, Mary. It is said that she was strange, and one of the members of the party described her as neurotic.
Sounds like me.
This hunting party consisted of Annie, Poole, and Mary Field, and then a group of natives from Fort Simpson. So one day, they had set up camp, and they all went to sleep one night. They were laughing around the fire. Everything was fine. Well, they woke up the next day, and Annie was missing.
And you said she's like a kid, right? Or
I couldn't find an age, but like the little photo that I saw of her, she would have been like a young teen. Like okay. She's not like a child, but she's not an adult.
Right. Like she still probably needed a babysitter.
Probably, yeah.
But just barely.
But again, at first, they didn't think much about her disappearance. They thought that she just walked a little ways into the woods to explore a little bit and was going to come right back. They didn't think she had gone far. But as time went on, Mary became worried for her younger cousin. Poole would then head out into the forest with 5 hunters. And these names, again, are NPC names.
Oh, no.
Diamond C, Boston Jack, Charlie Johan, George Tassou, and Big Charlie.
Big Charlie!
And these were veteran native hunters, so it didn't take them long to pick up on Annie's trail. At first, looking at the prints, it seemed like she had just gotten lost. But as they continued to follow the trail, it got increasingly difficult to keep up with this trail of moccasin prints, because it seemed like that Annie had picked up speed and darted through the wilderness, and the quote that I found was, as if on the wings of the wind. So, like, she was gone, judging by the prints. Like, she was flying through the forest. And they followed this trail for 9 days.
Holy crap! Like, she wasn't missing that long, and they still can't find her after 9 days?
Yeah, no. Like, again, it starts off looking like she's lost, and then the trail, like, she clearly picked up a lot of speed. Like, she went into, like, a full sprint. And the trail just went like that for 9 days.
Holy crap.
But along the way through of following this trail, they were finding pieces of Annie's clothing that apparently had been shredded and were hanging from various branches at random intervals. It was like she, as she was sprinting through the forest, she was just ripping her clothes off and throwing the pieces as she was sprinting through the trees.
Was she on something?
That's a good question.
Because, like, that doesn't, like, that's not normal behavior. Like, that sounds like there is something that she's, like, so it's in Canada, which means it's probably cold. Mm-hmm. And she's sprinting full speed for 9 days, tearing off her clothing as she goes.
Yeah. That's, like, several dollaritas deep at Applebee's.
I was not prepared for that.
That's not, like you said, that's not normal behavior.
I was not prepared.
So they follow this trail for 9 days. They're finding bits of her clothes everywhere. And again, despite being naked in the harsh Canadian wilderness, the trail continued going up the mountain. So the group followed her trail for 4 more days before they finally gave up, because they weren't finding her. So they were unable to find her, and they ended up having to leave. But the strangest part of the story wouldn't come until months later, when they got back home and reported the incident, which eventually worked its way into the local newspapers. After that, a hunter who was identified only by the name Charlie... There's a lot of Charlies in this story.
I was going to say, so this isn't Big Charlie. This is a different Charlie.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's a different one, but they said he's only identified by the name Charlie, so I have no clue who this is, if that's just an alias or if that's actually his name, but...
Maybe it's Little Charlie.
Maybe. But he came to the police, and he told them of his experience in the Nahanni Valley. Charlie stated that while he was hunting near Third Canyon, so all of these canyons, when they were, the prospectors were mapping out the canyon, they're literally just first, second, third, and fourth canyon.
Creative.
Yeah, but it's easy to remember. Because they just named them like, all right, this is the first canyon we came to, so this is first canyon.
Yeah, but what if you come from the other way?
Okay, fair. You got me there. Anyway, he was hunting near Third Canyon. He had set up camp for the night by Flat River, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think that goes into Headless Creek and into the Headless Valley.
Well, didn't you say most of them were all connected?
It's all connected by the Nahanni River, yeah. Flat River branches off of the Nahanni River and goes in between, in, down into the canyons.
Okay.
But he set up camp in near Flat River, off the shore a little ways, and he was awoken in the middle of the night by the sound of a rock falling into the river. And it's, as you can imagine, it's very dark out there because there's no humans out there. It's just natural.
Mm-hmm.
So the only light that he had was the moonlight that was reflecting off of the river. And about 100 yards away, he spotted a naked girl running on all fours up the side of the cliff. And he described her movements as like an animal.
I don't know why it makes me think of, which one was it that had the girl that, like, crawled up the wall and was hanging on the ceiling with, like, all the hair?
Oh, The Exorcist?
Was it The Exorcist?
Was it The Exorcist?
I thought she was floating in the bed.
That one I remember she was going backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's floating in bed and then crawling backwards down the stairs.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a newer one. Is it The Ring? Mm. No. Yes? No.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's been a while since I've seen the Ring movies, so like it may be.
See, I only have to watch horror movies once, and then they scar me for life, and I have nightmares about them years later.
Also understandable.
Anyway, she crawled up a cliff.
Yeah. On all fours. She was just running up the cliff, knocking more rocks into the river below, and Charlie said her expression was like a rictus grin, like the expression was frozen on her features, and her eyes were wide and wild. He was pretty much, whenever he was telling this, he was like, you know, normally, like, I remember, he remembered the missing girl story that he'd read in the paper, and he was like, I think this is the girl, and he was, that's what he was telling the police, but he said that at the time, when he saw her, naturally, you're probably going to be thinking, oh, I need to go see if this person needs help. But he said when he saw this girl, the only thing he could think of was, I need to not let her see me. I don't need to go near her. I need to stay far away.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame him.
He had that gut feeling that something was not right, that he did not need to be near her or be spotted by her.
Oh, could it be her climbing up a cliff?
In the cold Canadian wilderness with not a bit of clothes on, just on all fours going up the mountain like nothing.
Yeah, this is why I don't leave my house.
But again, police dismissed the story, and they never investigated because of the fact that no one could survive naked in the Canadian mountains for that long.
See, this is why we need the X-Files to actually exist, because they would investigate.
Mm-hmm. But that section of river where Annie disappeared was renamed to something a little more nice. It was renamed to May Creek in her memory.
Well, that's nice. And it's better than, like, you know, the Valley of the Headless mm-hmm. Men is very descriptive. You know, they could have been like Naked Crazy May Creek.
Yeah.
But they were very respectful and just called
Psycho
it May.
Creek.
Psycho Creek. Well, I know a place I'm never going.
You sure you don't want to go investigate? Because, like, I didn't write down all of the stories because, like, this isn't even all of them. There are other stories of other hikers, campers, and gold prospectors going missing and them finding either a burnt-down cabin and a headless corpse or just a headless corpse and a campsite.
Now, is this all historical that, like, these all happened in the early 1900s, or is this something that, you know, even today people are ending up?
It's less today because of the fact that no one's going into this valley as much anymore. That's the only reason that these murders have, or I'm guessing murders, but these deaths have stopped and disappearances have stopped, is because no one is going into the valley as much as they used to.
Now, is it, like, prohibited, or is it just that people hear the stories and they're like, nope?
I remember seeing something that said the Valley of the Headless Men was a prohibited spot, but I think it's mostly just people being like, nope, I'm not going into that valley.
I don't blame them.
Like I said, the natives that lived around the area of the valley, they think that that valley is cursed. They believe that something, there is an evil spirit that haunts the valley and that they don't go in there because it's a forbidden area for them.
I don't think it's an evil spirit. I think it's an evil tribe.
Or that, yeah, because I'm sure there's parts of the valley that haven't been explored just because people haven't been able to get to them, like the caves that's all through there. Because you can really go down the rabbit hole with this one because a lot of people think that, like, this is Bigfoot sanctuary because it's a remote valley that not a lot of people go into anymore. And then there's also the Hollow Earth theory, and they think that this is one of the entrances to the Hollow Earth. It's in the Nahanni Valley.
I don't buy Bigfoot. I don't think Bigfoot's up there. I think Bigfoot is a little more temperate. A little souther. Oh God, I spend too much time with you. A little more southern.
It's more down souther.
You can't see it, but yep, that little spot between your eyes being pinched right now.
Carry on.
Where's my Advil?
Well, Bigfoot, Sasquatch. Supposedly that was one theory of what lives in this valley.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Jeff's cousin wouldn't be in there.
Yeah, probably not. But who knows? There was also, along with the other deaths and disappearances, there was a case of, I believe the Royal Canadian Mounted Patrol went in one time, and one of the people that went in reported hearing a lot of very strange howling around their location, as if something was trying to scare them off and get them out of the valley. Like, they said they felt that, like, they were not welcome in that valley. Whatever was in there did not want them there.
Did it sound like a creepy little girl howling?
I think it was more like people trying to imitate wolves.
Mmm. Gotcha. I'm just imagining that creepy, grinning, wild-eyed, naked girl fake howling to try to scare people off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the side of the tribe still lives in the valley, and they just haven't been found yet.
Yeah. That would make sense.
Because, like, I'm sure if, like, your entire family, like, you, your whole, all your ancestors and everyone in your family and your tribe has grown up in this valley, I have a feeling they've been all over the valley and would know the entrances to the caves.
Yeah, I wonder if it's kind of something like that, you know that island with the tribe that shot down the helicopter?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
I wonder if it's something like that, where they are trying to just keep people away from them.
And that explains why they don't want people coming in and taking the gold. It's because it's the gold from their land. It's, you're stealing from them.
Yeah. I think that probably makes the most sense, to be honest.
It makes the most sense, and it's the creepiest to think that there's possibly a whole tribe of people in this valley and no one's ever seen them for years.
Yeah, just living in secret.
They see you if you go into the valley, but you won't see them.
Yeah, no, I could have done without you saying that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Krakko.
Oh, I'm sure it's fine. So actually, if I can pull it up here, there is a poem that was written about the first part that I thought was interesting. And again, it's a name I'm going to butcher because I don't know how you pronounce this person's name. Nils Asfelt. But the poem's title is The McLeod Brothers 3. Some of the details in this story might be slightly different because, like, I tried to stay as accurate as I could, but the stories change depending on who tells it. Little details change.
Yeah, well, and also, like, a poem is... they have creative license, you know what I mean? They change something so it sounds better, or omit this, or add, you know.
So it says, it was 1904 and the McLeod Brothers 3 set out to find gold on the old Nahanni. Willie and Frankie and Charlie all came. Did they know they would earn deathly fame? If you're going on a trip, you ought to go in style. So they took the scenic route to make it worth their while. They took the train to Vancouver, a boat to Alaska, and mushed up the Stikine River by dog sled to go faster. From Telegraph Creek, they crossed Dease Lake, the Continental Divide, not an easy path to take. Down the Dease River, then along the Laird, finally up the Highland, they'd been mushing quite hard. As they had made it, those three brothers bowled to the Grand Flat River. There was rumored to be gold. They fixed up old sluice boxes that were lying around, and sluiced and panned all day and night till shiny nuggets they found. Once they found their riches, they built themselves a boat. Didn't matter what it looked like, as long as it could float. They pushed it off down Flat River, which, despite its soothing title, was known for dangerous rapids, where a good canoe was vital. The cascade of the 13 steps was more than just some waves. By the 13th step, there was nothing left of the McLeod's boat to be saved. Their scow was destroyed, and to their great displeasure, they were left with but a rifle and not a hint of their treasure. Rifle in hand, they hiked back up river to pan some more gold, though they only got a sliver. They built a new boat, by this time knowing better, portaged around the Cascades, not getting any wetter. They returned to the city and started to plan a second trip to the north and more gold to pan. Charlie, of course, being the older, wiser brother, decided not to come and was replaced by another. His mysterious replacement was a Scottish engineer. They never even knew his name, maybe Wilkinson or Weir. Off they went, Nahanni bound, for better or for worse. Not long thereafter, they caught Dead Man Valley's awful curse. But Charlie didn't worry until waiting two more years, when he mounted a search party to help allay his fears. He searched high and low with help from RCMP and found their remains, which weren't pleasant to see. The bodies were headless and what was left was rotten, but strange of all, there was no sign of the Scotsman. The only clue left was carved into the wood. It read, "We found a fine prospect," not that it did them any good. As you can see, the McLeods' death are a mystery. If we try, we can fill this gap in history. Was the police report right? Did they die of starvation? If that were true, does it explain decapitation? Or maybe it was bloodthirsty, headhunting Naha folks. But quite frankly, my friends, that sounds like a hoax. Perhaps the Scotsman shot them down and fled to Vancouver. Is that what he was, a murderer and looter? Could it have been a wild beast, a bear, or wolverine that killed Charlie's brothers and picked the bones clean? Whatever the truth, there's no doubt in my mind, gold on the Nahani is better left behind.
It's dark and gruesome, but that was actually really pretty. Like, it had a really nice cadence to it, and it was really beautifully written.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those spooky poems you could read at a campfire.
Yeah, or like on Halloween night.
Very good Halloween campfire poem.
Yeah. That was a very beautiful way to end it versus how we usually end, which is awful.
I was like, this works because, like, maybe we should just leave that gold there.
Yeah.
Seeing as the last people that tried to find it ended up decapitated along the river.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Maybe don't take stuff that's not yours.
Exactly. It's that easy.
Well, thank you very much for the story. I think that was a really good one. I really liked that. I mean, obviously it's twisted and dark and scary and everything, mm-hmm. but I really liked it. And I really liked that poem.
Yeah, actually there was something that I had saw somewhere in my meme browsing that brought this to my attention, and I was like, wait a minute, that reminds me of this story. It was something about a valley I saw, and it was like, I was like, wait a minute, I remember a story. This is perfect.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much, Krakko. And I hope your voice and your cough and your lungs get better.
It seems to be getting better. I just gotta get my voice back now.
Well, the people don't know this, but I offered to, we could reschedule recording mm-hmm. to later in the week, and you're all like, no, I can't, because I have plans. And I was like, you know what, dude? That's the end of the story. It's a really bad story. This is why I shouldn't tell stories.
One of those stories that don't really have an ending. The ending is up to interpretation.
The interpretation is that we recorded as planned.
Yes.
It's up to interpretation.
I mean, kinda, sorta, yeah, but...
Well, thank you again. You did good, my little froggy friend.
Hey.
We will be back in 2 weeks with another Motel, whatever it is. What is it?
Motel, Motel.
Yes, we will be back at we'll be back there. So that will be exciting, and I think I mentioned it's a
festive
one.
It's not just
one,
murder,
so,
it's festive.
Get ready to get all cozy, maybe sit in front of the campfire, drink some eggnog.
Yes.
Someone murdered with bells on.
Yeah, we'll do something for the holidays, yeah.
All right, well, I will say, since the weather for both of us is a little iffy, we might make this a slightly shorter-ish one.
Yeah, it's fine. Sometimes we have little bits of little shorter ones, so it's not too bad, though.
So, all right, well, thank you again, Krakko, and we will see you guys in 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
And we love you. Bye.
Okay, bye.
As always, make sure to check out our website for all of the show notes, sources, and more information at thesquonkandthehag.com.
And we would also love and appreciate your support by either leaving a review on iTunes or through small monthly donations using the viewer support link in the description. And if you don't subscribe, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast network to get notified of new episodes every Thursday.
All right, Krakko, you ready?
Okay, bye.